Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're taking the day off, and since many of us are traveling, we're going to listen back to our recent show talking about airports. Because whether you like to curl up with a book, beeline to the bar, or bang out emails with your laptop perched on your knees, there's no place quite like an airport. Since 9/11, airports increasingly became their own worlds, sealed off from the places around them, and in recent years, ever more realistic simulations of the cities they're in. And we're in a moment where airports are facing huge challenges because of COVID. So today, we're going to reacquaint ourselves with this archipelago of runways and roller bags, tourist traps, and turkey wraps. It's Friday. Let's fly. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal.
Yeah. Yo, yo, the time the plane leaving? All right, see you at the airport.
Airports, remember them? Today we reflect on how they've changed, what they mean to us, and what you can expect on your next flight. We all have our own relationship to these places, whether they hold our fears of flying, bring us back to amazing vacations, or remind us of when we first arrived here in the U.S. But as the planes have changed over the decades, so have the spaces. An airport reflects the society around it. Post-9/11 security, the rise in self-service retail, ubiquitous devices, and now, of course, COVID. And they're often the first, last, and only impression a traveler has of a city. Singapore's airport dazzles. Newark Airport, less so. So what do our Bay Area airports say about us and the times we live in? The new Harvey Milk Terminal boasts Heath tiles in the restrooms, selfie-friendly lighting, and improved acoustic design. Get ready to talk about your favorite and your most hated airports. As many people prepare to return to air travel, we want your stories. So give us a call now, 866-733-6786. That is, confess your love for Oakland Airport, like me, at 866-733-6786. Or you can get in touch about that weird conspiracy theory about DIA on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or you can email your justified hatred for Dulles to forum@kqed.org. Joining us first today, we have Elaine Glusak. She's a travel columnist for the New York Times. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Alexis. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We also have Harriet Baskis, a freelance travel journalist and author of the blog Stuck at the Airport. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
So, Elaine, let's start with you. A lot of people haven't flown for a while. Can you just tell me, like, the top three things you've noticed that have really changed the most in a post-COVID world, or a world living with COVID, really?
Yeah, well, okay, so here, first to start, is a good one. Like, it's way cleaner. I swear, you can eat off the floor, but please don't. Yeah, so they all went into the whole, like, cleaning, and that's a great thing. Masks obviously are mandated. So, you know, you're going to walk around and talk to people in muffled tones and try to keep your distance. But that's sort of a third thing. Like, you are supposed to keep your distance. There's a lot of 6-foot social distancing stickers. But really, human behavior takes over once people are entering the planes, and that sort of collapses. So just, you know, my advice is just wear, like, you know, a good fitting mask.
Yeah. Are there things that people, like, must know going in, or if they've got anxiety about flying at this time? Is it just about, you know, yeah, a good mask, maybe an N95, KN95, something like that? Or is there anything else that people could have to prepare themselves?
Yeah, no, I mean, like, security really is the same. I think people want to know what's different, and really, like, bag checking, all that stuff is really the same. But when you go through security, you still have your mask on. The TSA agent is behind, like, plexiglass, and they're going to ask you to drop your mask briefly, like, momentarily, while they're looking at your ID, and then you put it back on. So a lot of that is very much the same. I would say with regard to airports, like, what's different is, like, not everything is open in every airport. You know, flying is still down, you know, significantly. And so not every concession, you know, thinks it's worthwhile for them to be in business. So you might not like your favorite breakfast spot might not be open. Like, for example, mine isn't at O'Hare. So just be prepared for that. You may not be able to get everything. And that means the lines may be longer at the concessions that are open. So I think everything just takes a little more patience, a little slower going, and maybe give yourself a little extra time to make up for that.
Got it. Thank you for that. Harriet Baskiss, author of Stuck at the Airport. What's your favorite airport as someone who spends a lot of time in these places? And what's an airport that you avoid? And you can give us the whys there, too.
Okay. Well, I have to say that San Francisco Airport is my favorite. In fact, I flew home yesterday from San Francisco. My flight was scheduled at noon. I got there at 8 a.m. so that I could have time to hang out and see all the art and check out which stores were open and just see what it felt like.
Wow. Do you often do that? Like get there 4 hours early just to chill?
Oh, always, always. And if I've got a connecting flight, I really, if I need to have a layover somewhere, I try to choose an airport like San Francisco or some other airport where I know there's stuff to do. And I choose the longest layover I can get.
Oh, wow. What's your favorite amenity to be inside an airport?
I don't fly enough to be to get into the lounges all the time. So I think my favorite amenity are the really nice chairs, or some airports have like quiet gates where they have nice like sofas, and sometimes they have book exchanges. So I like those spaces that are just nice where you've got maybe an outdoor deck, or you've got a library or something that you can just hang out and spread out and feel safe taking a nap sometimes.
Nice. Elaine Glusek, I was intrigued by your recent New York Times story, The Trouble with Airports and How to Fix Them, at the amount of attention that was actually given to sound design and the soundscape. Is it just a matter of just like turning off the dang CNN, or is there more to it than that?
No, that's kind of it. I mean, that goes a long way, you know. Bringing temperatures down has become really important, I think, especially post-COVID, when people are experiencing a lot more stress, and I think we're a lot more aware of like mental health. And people are already somewhat stressed, you know, trying to make their flights, paying attention to the clock, and then to hear, you know, a lot of barking going on. Perhaps it's like a contentious talk show. it's nothing like adding anxiety to your trip. So this trend to silent airports really grew out of Europe, mostly, where they really just stopped sort of broadcasting to the entire airport, you know, flight 293 to Helsinki is boarding. Instead, that announcement might go out, you know, it might not go out at all at London City Airport. They don't even have announcements. You just have to pay attention to your phone or the screens that say, hey, we're boarding now. It's growing here in the United States. Again, I think COVID has sort of helped that. San Francisco's done a great job. I think they're the leaders in that, in creating the silent airport. They started doing it before COVID, but it's really taken off with the new terminal. But I noticed, even I flew out of O'Hare last week, and I was completely shocked to see that that CNN was on mute. And, you know, they had the subtitles, so you could follow along. And that's all well and good until someone comes along. I was flying out of Steamboat Springs, Colorado last month, and the football game was on mute. And then the janitor went by and like turned up the sound because the janitor couldn't couldn't like hang around to read the captions.
What's something that kind of used to be standard in airports that you miss?
Oh,
that's kind of gone.
Oh, I mean, well, gosh, I mean, everybody sort of pines for the pre-TSA days. I mean, obviously we need enhanced security, but there was nothing like, you know, being really late, pulling up to the curb and running right through, you know, or just even having friends with you, like, you know, seeing your family off. I remember, and my child was super, super small. This was like, you know, pre-9/11, and like they met me at the gate, you know, with like flowers. Like everybody misses that a little bit. That's all just been pushed sort of like, you know, to baggage claim. Basically, you can still have those reunions,
right?
But
right,
I sort of miss that. I sort of miss that easy coming and going. I mean, at the same time, like, because we have to spend so much more time behind on the air side, they call it.
Yeah.
You know, the airports have gotten so much better. Like the food's better. The bars are better. Like the shopping's better, you know, generally speaking, not everywhere. So I think because we do have to spend more time at the airports, we have, you know, that's the compensation.
Yeah. Harriet, it does seem to me that as the sort of air side, as we're talking about, you know, the once you pass through TSA security has gotten more sealed off from the city, that airports have tried to like add more of the city inside the actual, you know, bubble of air travel. What's an airport that does that really successfully, you think?
Well, I'm on my way to Amsterdam this week, and I know that that airport does a really great job of having a museum. There's a local museum, there's a library, there's
just a nice canal right big, through there.
Yeah, big tulips on the wall. I mean, stuff like that. In the U.S., I'm thinking the Fort Wayne Airport is just one of my favorites. Very small, but you definitely feel the Midwest friendly, I guess, because when you land, somebody is standing there, or they used to, with a little basket and with cookies, wrapped cookies from a bakery down the street, welcoming you to town. I thought that was a joke when someone told me that was going to happen, but that happens.
They actually came out and were just like, welcome to the Midwest. Here's a cookie.
Yep. Volunteers stand there and hand out cookies, and they're good.
We have some comments that I want to read from some of our listeners. Jack writes, the airport in Charleston, South Carolina has rocking chairs. It's amazing how that small amenity makes an airport feel so pleasant. Definitely felt like I had arrived in the South when I saw those. Eric writes, the fastest time I've ever clocked is probably the 37 gates and one terminal that I ran through to get to a connection in Charlotte. It was an Olympic quality run. My flight was late and they weren't going to hold the plane. Feel sorry for my seatmate as I was a sweaty mess. And Michael writes, I was flying to Europe right after 9/11 and had to make a connection through Heathrow. I saw a huge mass of very upset people who were being told by the unsympathetic and rude security personnel only one bag was allowed in the terminal transfer. As a business traveler, it wasn't a chore for me to stuff everything to my carry-on, but the number of immigrants and other travelers crying and panicking about not being able to fit everything into one bag left such a bad memory about Heathrow and their security personnel. I've literally done everything possible to avoid flying through Heathrow ever since 2001. We do want to hear from you. What's an airport that's wowed you? Or an airport that just consistently disappoints? Is there a feature you wish that more airports had? Call now, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Or you can get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. After the break, we're going to talk with some of the people who made the new terminal happen at SFO. So if you have questions about that, you can email them to forum@kqed.org. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more Forum after the break. Listen, mister, can't you see I got to get back to my baby once or more? Anyway, yeah, get a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a going home. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about airports, your favorite airports, the ones you hate, what the future holds for them. Here with me are Elaine Glusak, a travel columnist for The New York Times, and Harriet Baskis, freelance travel journalist and author of the blog Stuck at the Airport. And I want to add caller Becca from Sunnyvale into our conversation. Welcome.
Hi. For the past 4 or 5 years, whenever I'm going to the airport, I put a few dollar bills in my pocket, and I make sure to give a dollar to whoever's cleaning the bathrooms because I figure they need the recognition. And I'm sure I'd like to encourage other people. I'm sure they need the money.
Yeah, true. And Elaine, you know, you mentioned that these airports are much cleaner because of all the deep cleaning that's been going on as well. Yeah,
they are. And I salute Becca. That's a great idea. You know, tipping someone who's really doing a service, much appreciated.
Yeah. I want to bring in our experts on SFO. We're joined now by Matt Needham, firm-wide aviation and transportation director for HOK, an architectural design firm, and Farah Young, project manager at San Francisco International Airport, who led the Harvey Milk Terminal 1 project. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Farah, maybe we'll start with you. What was your approach to redesigning this terminal at SFO? Like, what were you actually trying to optimize for?
Well, we knew that the old terminal had aged itself out on so many different levels, just with security changes, sustainability desires, and just what people, what we all wanted when we traveled. And so, you know, we wanted to tap into what made people want to fly again and want to just reignite that romance of travel. And so we had all these lofty goals and, you know, we set out to achieve them from the very beginning, just to represent this diverse region and then also, you know, give people a place where they felt good about flying.
I mean, do you think it matters that much? Like, do you think the design of a terminal really changes people's experience of flying?
I do, because, you know, it's easy to simply create a box and put all the functionality in there. But when you give people, you know, I was smiling as I was listening to everybody talk about SFO, because we care. I mean, like you mentioned, you know, we choreograph our lighting so that when you look at yourself and the reflection of yourself in the mirror, your face is illuminated. You know, you look your best. When you sit down, we try to give you a variety of you know, lounges and seats and tables to do what you need to do to find a quiet place throughout your journey, or even, you know, the museums that you talk about to, you know, help educate, communicate, give you a place that maybe surprises you, puts a smile on your face. I think it makes a huge difference. We have music in the restrooms, you know, take you away from the moment and the stress of processing, you know, even myself, you know, there's anxiety. And so if there's a way to just make you feel good about some part of your journey, then we're really happy about that.
Yeah. Matt Needham, aviation and transportation director for HOK, architectural design firm, which did not work on SFO, but has worked on a bunch of other places. Can you tell us about sort of what the sort of trends in airport design have really been? And how our sort of Bay Area airport ecosystem, you know, so SFO, Oakland, San Jose, I know there's some smaller ones too, but primarily those three, kind of what role you see those places playing here in our region?
Yeah, sure. You know, so I think airports are getting a lot better. You know, historically, they have been kind of really almost engineered for efficiency, you know, mm-hmm. And now it's a lot more about the travel experience. As Farah's talking about, you know, the actual, look, when you fly in an airplane, it's still pretty miraculous, right? I mean, I know that we have all this technology and this data-driven, you know, stuff, but, you know, over 50 years ago, we started flying in metal tubes, 35,000 feet in the air, over 500 miles an hour, you know? Pretty amazing. So
that's why I have to fortify myself with turkey wraps before doing it.
just to
deal with the awe of the experience. Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the difficult things about airport design, though, right? Because you are about to, you know, do a technologically marvelous thing. You're about to hurl yourself across the earth. And yet you're also kind of at a bus stop, you know?
Yeah,
balancing that experience seems actually like quite a difficult architectural task.
Well, a lot of the current trends are really leaning towards more putting the human aspect first, right? Mm-hmm. So, yes, we want efficient facilities. We want to make sure that you don't have to wait in TSA forever or, you know, whatever the processing might be, bag claim, whatever it is. But as you're through an airport, it really needs to be more of a human touch. And so one of the things that they're, you know, hospitality is a trend. I mean, SFO does that very well. Other trends are, you know, because you're going in that metal tube for hours with pressurized air, maybe you might want to have some fresh air and sunlight, mm-hmm. you know, before you go or as you land. And then another one might be to provide, you know, elements of nature in the airport environment itself. You know, you might want to have, you know, plants, trees, mm-hmm. things to actually represent the region that you're at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really love this idea that the kinds of experiences that we have in airports and these like very specialized spaces. I want to add Brooke from San Mateo into our conversation. Welcome.
Thank you. I really agree with what your guests are saying. It makes a big difference. The kind of experience you have in the airport makes a big difference on your flight. We were in Paris, Charles de Gaulle, waiting, and at our gate there was a piano. And my son's a musician, and he sat down and played, and the personnel, United personnel made a big deal of it. They had him be the first person on the plane. Everybody applauded, and everybody felt good for the first couple of hours of the flight because we'd all had this great experience together.
Oh, man, do you remember what he played?
No, he played a range of stuff and then started playing Requests. So most beat stuff.
Oh, that's wonderful. Hey, thank you for that memory, Brooke. That is a really nice one. Phil from San Francisco, I think you've got a favorite airport you'd like to share.
Yeah, and it sort of touches upon... Hi, by the way. Hi.
Oh, hey, thanks for calling.
Thank you. It sort of touches upon what your guest was saying. I like Palm Springs Airport. It has this sort of indoor-outdoor vibe. It's small. It's the kind of airport where you get off the plane right onto the tarmac, which is kind of cool and romantic. Feels like right. You know, the 1950s
yeah,
or something.
Rock star in the 1960s, yeah.
Yeah, you know, Pope, you can kiss the ground or something. But it also has plants and desert cactus. And as a bonus, they have a full bust of Sonny Bono. So, I mean, you know, it has it all. It's a really cute airport, and it's like human scale. I really like it.
Yeah. I mean, the other great thing about Palm Springs Airport is that it's in Palm Springs. So when you get off the plane, you're in Palm Springs, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's a pretty good bonus, yeah.
Yes. Matt, I also happen to know you're a fan of human scale airports as well.
Yeah. You know, I think when you take a look at some of the larger international hubs, you know, Beijing, for example, you know, Those massive terminals are not a human scale. I mean, we kind of joke about them calling them roofitecture, really, because they're big roofs over, you know, acres. You know, I think my favorite airport is kind of close to Palm Springs. It's actually Long Beach Airport. Beautiful little Art Deco terminal that was renovated to be just ticketing. And then there are these little pavilions that lead you to a concourse, and the concourse is you know, apron level, so you walk out and get in the aircraft like a 60s rock star, like you're saying. And you know, between those two concourses, they're separated by palm trees and a wood deck. You know, it's really cool, indoor outdoor, takes full advantage of the Southern California climate.
That's so nice. Let's bring in Tony from Burlingame into the conversation. Welcome, Tony.
Thank you very much. This is an amazing topic and everything. One of my favorite airports would be Singapore Changi International. It's kind of like a city with terminals, but what really amazed me the most is the butterfly gardens at the airport itself. It was a really nice place to make a transfer and be with the butterflies.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, Harriet or Elaine, have you been to Singapore? And what do you think about that sort of, you know, the top-ranked kind of global airports?
This is Elaine. I have. And in fact, I'm so glad that Tony brought up the butterfly garden. That is just the most spectacular amenity I've seen. That's in Singapore, Changi. But they also have a free movie theater. So, and, you know, they show, like, family-friendly movies. So you can just pop in while you're trying to kill an hour. I got to watch A Dog's Purpose and got to cry. And then you can go have like Kaya toast. Like it's the best of Singapore right there. They went over the top with that one. And you know, that is one that like Harriet, I imagine, would want to spend several hours in.
Yeah, Harriet, have
yes,
you been?
Absolutely. I spent 24 hours there once intentionally. They have a two-story slide that you can go down. I think if you spend like $20, you get a free ride down the slide. They also, it feels like right before COVID, they opened up a kind of a standalone terminal that was really all about entertainment with the world's largest indoor waterfall and a Yotel right in that space. It's like a giant shopping mall with activities. And I stayed in the Yotel so that I could be closer to the waterfall and closer to the airport. It is, it's designed. And remember, in Singapore, a lot of people live in very small spaces. So it's designed that people who aren't flying will just come and spend the day.
Wow. Fairy Young, do you, who worked on the Harvey Milk Terminal 1 project, in fact, led that project, did you see yourself as competing with those like major Asian airports or European airports that just are really pieces of kind of like civic infrastructure that in a way that maybe we don't think of it here in the U.S.?
Yes and no. Actually, it's funny. Changi was one of my favorites. So I spent 7 hours there prior to building our airport. The group of us on our project actually went to the top three Asian airports before starting Terminal 1. Even though we can't compete with that. It's a completely different market. But it was good to see, you know, what everyone's intentions were and how they went about it to achieve those goals, right? And a butterfly landed on my head, and I thought, and my hand, and I thought it was magical. So there's no butterfly garden at SFO, but I think, you know, in talking to the folks at Changi, you know, they stuck to their intentions, and they too cared about the public and the community. And you're right, they opened it up to the community to go to the airport, even if they weren't traveling, and provide them amenities and shared with the greater community. So, and I think at SFO, you know, like you said, you know, sometimes that's the only experience you get of either San Francisco or the Bay Area. And so we tried to do the same thing, is give you a sort of taste and a feel of what we have here in the small time that we get to be a shared community.
Let's bring in Michael from San Francisco's Outer Sunset, who sounds like he really wants to harsh our vibe here. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, Alexis. Hey, everyone. Happy Friday. You know, let me start with a positive. I really like Amy's and Tacolicious, right? Great contributions of local restaurants in SFO. But I think the reality of flying is very different than what it was, let's say, 20 years ago, right? Someone had mentioned in a call earlier about, you know, 2001, post 9/11. Ever since then, we started paying for baggage, things like that. And I'm afraid it'll never go away. In fact, you know, look at how hostesses on the planes are being treated. Look at how pilots are overworked. Acknowledge the FAA system where scheduling is canceled flights daily. It's great that we have really nice bus stations, but look at the buses, y'all.
Yeah. You know, I think another criticism of, or at least, you know, an open question with airports, just for you, Matt Needham, is, you know, if you look at the Bay Area and you look just where our airports are, and then you imagine rolling forward sea level rise because of climate change, just to fully harsh our mellow here on airports for a second, they're in an extremely vulnerable position in the long term because of climate change. So what are architecture firms like yourself suggesting, and what are they doing to kind of harden this infrastructure?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Well, I think one example is the new LaGuardia Terminal B. We actually just completed that. The second concourse is going to be opening a little bit soon. But, you know, we started the design of that after the Superstorm Sandy that really raised essentially the whole runway system was kind of underwater. And so one of the things that we did is that we raised all of the you know, the hidden stuff that you don't find in there, that travelers don't usually see, the baggage system, all the electrical switchgear, all of the kind of essential facilities into like a mezzanine off of the apron level, off of kind of the ground level. And that really was a direct response to increasing sea level rise. And so we see that as a real viable solution to get things going again. You know, the runways are still going to, you can't land on them, but after the storm goes away, it recedes, you can then use, you know, the facility with very, very minor repair.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like maybe we need to change where our airports generally are located instead of like fill on the bay in the long term.
Traditionally, No, I mean, the bay fill thing was the way that a lot of airports were generated. I mean, look, the other thing is that you don't want an airport to be so close to, you know, residential areas, because they kind of make a lot of noise, right?
Right.
And so that's, I think, one of the drivers was to have them in these areas that no one owned. So you, okay, well, let's just fill this area with this water with fill, and we can put an airport there. That's kind of how a lot of airports started. But anyway, you're right.
Yeah, it's been complicated. It's going to be complicated in the next 50 years. Back to the nice, good feelings about airports. We have some favorite airports. Sandy Althouse loves New Orleans. She says, the new New Orleans airport is small, but with a big attitude. And like the city, there are plenty of top or unique restaurants to sample. Nancy writes, Dubai is an elegant, sparkling airport with great people watching. Rachel, on the other hand, writes, I flew a lot for work pre-pandemic, and one of the airports that I try to avoid like the plague is LAX. It is icky and difficult. There's no good, healthy food. And it's LA. Susan writes, I love Santa Rosa Airport. It's a real airport. Last comment. Jane writes on the topic of things we miss. I miss the white courtesy phone in airports. My high school friends and I used to request fake pages and then laugh uproariously when we'd hear the page come over the loudspeaker. Of course, that was when you could go into the airport to greet and send off friends. Harriet, is there something you miss in the airport that used to be there?
I'm just laughing about the white courtesy phone because, again, in my 4 hours in San Francisco yesterday, I'm pretty sure I heard a fake call for somebody. So. But Elaine mentioned like not being able to like get met at the gate with flowers. I do really miss that. I remember one of the last places where I saw my father healthy was at the White Plains Airport when he could come and meet me. But I wanted to mention that some airports are bringing that back. You can get a gate pass. I've spent a lot of days, staycations, I guess you'd call them, at the Seattle airport the last 4 or 5 months. Detroit is doing it. You can get a day pass to
go inside.
Meet people.
Oh, wow. Yes. That's a good tip. Thank you so much. We're talking about airports, your favorite airports, the ones you hate, and what the future holds for them with Harriet Vasquez, freelance travel journalist and author of the blog Stuck at the Airport, Matt Needham, an aviation and transportation director for HOK, an architectural design firm, and Farrah Young, project manager at SFO, who led the Harvey Milk Terminal 1 project. And we've got to say goodbye to Elaine Glusek, travel columnist for the New York Times. Thanks so much for joining us, Elaine.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Stay tuned for more Forum, more of your comments and questions. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We are talking about airports, your favorite airports, the ones you hate, what the future holds for them. Here with me are Harriet Vasquez, freelance travel journalist and author of the blog Stuck at the Airport, Matt Needham, firm-wide aviation and transportation director for HOK, an architectural design firm, and Farrah Young, project manager at San Francisco International Airport, who led the Harvey Milk Terminal 1 project. I have a comment I want to throw at you, Farrah, which is, Susan writes, what's up with the built-in armrests on benches that prevent anybody from getting comfortable? Feels like a McDonald's dining room. Let's talk about seating, Farrah, at SFO.
I wonder if she's talking about the high-density seating. You know, that's why we have so much variety of seats, because we want you to have a choice. So, yes, there are those high-density seats with the armrest, but there's also banquettes and booths and this lounge chair that I like to lovingly call the croissant, because in plan it looks like a croissant. But there's so many just different options for you. If you want to sit by yourself or your family or group, you want to do some work, you want to go hide in a corner. And we don't have rocking chairs, but we do have these fabulous chaise lounges that overlook the San Bruno Mountains. And we're actually building an exterior green roof, over 6,000 square feet, where you can look out onto some plantings at all levels and just kick back and relax.
Yeah, that's nice. And when you go to other airports, Farrah, do you find yourself evaluating those like little things like, ooh, their bathroom is like this, their chairs are like this, or are you able to sort of like suspend the professional part of your brain?
No, it's entirely difficult. because I think I've just gotten spoiled with just the standard that we set for ourselves at SFO, that when I do have the opportunity to fly, you know, I can't help but notice little things. Some really great, and then some that I'm like, why?
Anything you've like stolen from another airport and brought to SFO?
Well, interestingly, those chaise lounges, you know, we found ourselves, I think, waiting for a while, I think in Hong Kong, and we just found these lounge areas that were private. And, you know, we made note of that. We said, you know, why don't we have more of that at SFO? We have such great views out. And so for Harvey Milk, we brought that in. There's actually, there's a hidden corner if you fly out to the very end of boarding area B, tucked away. And then there's one right in the middle of the terminal that overlooks the airfield. So we did bring that back with us.
Let's bring in George from Vallejo into the conversation. Welcome, George.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Hi. My favorite airport is actually no airport ever again. And my recommendation for the future of airports is that they be decommissioned. At the beginning of the pandemic, for the first 3 months, global warming gas production dropped by 8%, which is about the amount we need to be dropping it every year to be able to save the species. And we did that not because Donald Trump signed the Paris Climate Accord or the Green New Deal was passed. We did that because we all made individual decisions to stay home. And a huge part of that was not flying. And I've taken a vow not to fly again unless absolutely necessary, because we actually know how to stop global warming because we did it for 3 months.
Hey, George, are you going to trains? Are you driving an electric car? Like, what's your backup transportation?
We have one car as a family instead of two. It's a hybrid electric car. We are now driving, and we're not flying anywhere. We're not going to Europe, which I used to do all the time. I am going to take one more flight next summer to meet family in the East Coast, and after that, I'm going to tell everybody I'm not flying anymore. I can't do it because I have a 7-year-old son, and I know that every time I get on the airplane, I can see the smoke that will be coming into his lungs when he is my age, if the species actually is around anymore. We can stop global warming because we did it, but it's going to take us not moving airports out of the way of global sea level rise. It's going to take decommissioning them because we're choosing the last mode of transportation that's going to not be generating CO2 is going to be airplanes. And we have to just stop flying.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your perspective, George. And I think it's actually, you know, it is a very serious point that we right now don't have alternative fuels. We don't have electrified airplanes in any like real commercial capacity. So, Matt Needham, how do you think about this? I mean, are you like boning up on your train and, you know, high speed rail architectural skills, or do you think we'll still be designing and building airports long into the future?
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. And it was an amazing 3 months, right? And you didn't hear any planes overhead either. You know, the industry is trying to change. I know there's research in biofuels for aviation fuels, a lot of them, some being made from like algae. There's a ways out, but they're definitely researching that and trying to do it at scale so that can actually replace traditional jet fuel. Electric airplanes are coming. Now they're not very, that you can't go in great distances, but for regional hops, maybe up and down the coast, I think right now they have a range of about 500 miles, but they are coming. So what can we do in the meantime? Is really the kind of a responsible thing to do is to make airports as what we try to do is make airports as environmentally friendly as possible. So we just opened Salt Lake Airport, and it's going to be 94 gates, a huge airport. It's the first modern hub airport in the 21st century. And we just, I think last month, we were just, we just got LEED Gold certification. Mm-hmm. And that really is a, it's a benchmark, if you will. And we tried to do as much as we could to make the airport as sustainable as possible. So one of the things that you, very simple, when aircraft are on the ground and using, they have auxiliary engines in the back that don't power the plane, but power their systems like air conditioning. If and so we traditionally airports kind of have little individual like air conditioning units at each gate. And we made a much more central plant, if you will, much better efficiency than those. Lots of things that we did to try to really stem that tide, if you will.
Yeah, and it's gonna be complicated. If I were a betting person, I would say we probably will probably see this past few decades as a sort of golden age of aviation when we were able to fly much more easily and without thinking about the CO2 emissions that we're putting in there. Let's run back to some calls. Ben from Palo Alto, welcome to the show.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to mention that airports don't stop at the large Bravos and Charlies. There's a lot of much smaller ones, and those are some of my favorites. Palo Alto, for example, is a great place to go watch airplanes land. Watsonville has a wonderful fly-in restaurant. So I would just love like
Watsonville has a fly-in restaurant?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a lot of fun.
So that's like if you're doing general aviation, right, where you're like piloting your own plane, you just like you go there and just stop in for a burger.
Park at the restaurant. Yep. Wow. You can do that. Half Moon Bay has a great one. If you fly to Half Moon Bay, you can park and then walk down to the beach.
Wow. You know, do you have your own plane?
I don't have my own plane, but I'm a member of a flying club.
A flying club. Okay. Yeah, there's always, that vision. Sometimes when I was, listening to Matt talk about that vision of the small electric plane, I kind of thought like, well, there was this vision of general aviation way back, in the middle of the 20th century where lots of people would have been flying and, we would have had tons of small airports instead of these few big ones. What's your favorite small general aviation airport outside of the Bay Area?
Sorry, are you asking me?
Or Okay. Yeah.
Outside of the Bay Area, San Luis Obispo. I really like that. It's not quite as small. It's a lot. They've got a great FBO there with free ice cream.
Awesome. Hey, thank you, Ben. I appreciate that. Let's bring in Max from Davis. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you.
What's your favorite airport?
Yeah. My favorite airport is only for one reason. It's not really my favorite, but I think it's really cool that SeaTac has a meditation room. And since sleeping looks a lot like meditation, I can get away with sleeping there and no one else is in there.
Vasquez, I feel like getting rest in an airport is one of these really important things. Have you seen other ways that airports have done it that work well?
Absolutely. I wanted to bring that up. Some of the big international airports actually have like sleeping chairs. And I think in the first place, it might've been Singapore or where they had a timer in the chair because that's what you're worried about. You're going to fall asleep and miss your flight. So there was lounge chairs with timers. Brilliant. More and more in this country, you've got, we're beginning, and I think we'll have more now, like a Minute Suites is a brand that's expanding to different airports where they're little self-contained cabin type things that you rent by the hour or by 4 hours where you can rest, and some of them have showers. There's also, if I'm pronouncing it right, Jabberbox, which is bringing back this thing. They're literally like, I think some companies had them, quiet boxes that you can just go in and close the door and nap or have a quiet conversation. Those types of things are available. And then there's hotels that are nearby airports or in the airports, which will let you rent kind of by the day part.
Wow. Yeah. couple more listener comments on amenities, attractions, and nostalgia in the airport. Janet writes, years ago, I used to travel regularly between New York and Washington for business. At DCA, now called Reagan National, there were mobile manicurists in the gate area. A traveler could get a quick manicure without leaving my seat, my baggage, or people in my travel party. I never missed an announcement for a gate change or delay. Also in that same vein, something I, when I had the cash to do it, getting one of those little massages, like the massage kiosk, always love that. Carol writes, layover surprise in Atlanta, a glass case display about MLK, including a mannequin wearing one of his actual suits, shirts, and shoes. I've never forgotten standing there, seeing the actual size and shape of the man. Harriet, I wanted to come back to you on this because I know that one of your favorite things is kind of airport museums. What's the sort of, what are a couple of the best airport museums and sort of like displays that you've seen?
Well, Las Vegas Airport has great aviation stuff. Howard Hughes had his airline out of there, so you can see a lot of Howard Hughes stuff and the uniforms that the flight attendants would wear. I think someone earlier called them hostesses, but flight attendants are crew members. Milwaukee Airport has a great aviation museum right in the airport. I know San Francisco has an aviation library and museum over there. I really like that. And more there are airport-wide museum collections. So like Phoenix Airport has an airport art collection or an airport museum that has spreads art throughout the terminals. So more and more airports are using their 1% for art money from construction projects to put in both small artwork and large pieces. Oh. Like Salt Lake City has a great one.
Yeah. Annie from San Francisco, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm actually dovetailing on exactly what you just said. I appreciate the exhibits at SFO. I think they're a great way for families, especially to kill time while they're waiting for a flight. You know, they're educational and they open people's minds up to art. And I also wanted to just add something on the climate change thing. People can cut down their flights instead of just not flying for the rest of their lives. I canceled 4 flights in the last year. And if we all did that, we would all help the planet, just cutting down our flights.
Did you not take the trips or did you find another means of transport?
I did not take the trips. I just thought to myself, do I really need to do this trip? No, I can do this in 6 months or a year. And now my priorities are family. My brother's not well. And so I made this trip out to San Francisco to see him because I just really shuffled my priorities. And that's when I fly, when it's really something crucial like that. Because with Zoom, you know, we can all connect online. We don't have to get on a plane and spew new exhaust and emissions into the air. So I don't think we all have to say we're never flying again, but I think we all need to really think long and hard about every flight that we might want to make and ask, do we really need to make it?
Yeah, thanks so much. I appreciate that perspective, Annie. I wanted to ask one more thing of Farrah Young. What's something that you wish you could have done at SFO with the Harvey Milk Terminal that you weren't able to get done this time? Farrah, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was saying a good question. It's funny. We were just talking about how to create these immersive environments. And one thing that we still sort of fondly talk about is this sort of sound immersion thing, again, to get you into a different headspace, to take you out of either the moment of anxiety or get you excited about your trip. But there was a moment in time when we were talking about creating this sound immersive environment. You know, maybe a connecting point between A and B. And again, it has nothing to do with the efficiency or the operation of your travel. It was just to give you something of delight. But we didn't get to do it.
Yeah. Oh, well, next time. Couple of just really wonderful comments I want to read. Colin writes, a little different perspective from a corporate pilot. Kansai International Airport off the coast of Osaka in Japan is truly an oasis. The architecture is sublime, food selection is of great variety, the efficiency of the infrastructure is masterful, and the staff is as professional as they come. My personal favorite part is the view from the flight deck window on final approach to the eastbound runways. And we do have a couple of great stories just about the sort of kindness of strangers. Michelle writes, "An airport unexpectedly became a part of my personal history. On August 3rd, 2004, I was stuck between flights at Chicago O'Hare when I found out over the phone that my sister had died. I was weeping in a public place, and total strangers were incredibly kind, helping me through until I was on a flight home. A year later, I placed a single rose at the airport terminal where I received the news." Wow, thanks for sharing that with us, Michelle. And one more from a listener. "I was getting off a long-haul flight with my two young kids," which, man, that's tough, "and my daughter had gone boneless, literally flopped down at the gate, blocking the jetway and would not stop crying. One guy muttered, 'I hope that kid's not on my flight.' No, God, everyone knows that guy. And then a woman, a little older than me, came up and said, 'Hang in there, Mom. You're doing a good job.' I almost started crying myself. Even in the stress of an airport, people can be remarkably kind." We've been talking about airports. We've been joined by Matt Needham, firm-wide aviation and transportation director for HOK, an architectural design firm. Farrah Young, project manager at San Francisco International Airport, who led the Harvey Milk Terminal 1 project. And Harriet Vasquez, a freelance travel journalist and author of the blog Stuck at the Airport. Thanks so much to all three of you. Stay tuned for another hour ahead of Forum with Mina Kim. I'm Alexis Madrigal.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.